Evening, folks, and welcome to this week's edition of the Trinity Tims. We're kind of all over the place at the moment because it's summer and it's a pretty boring time of year. So we haven't sort of stuck to our Monday night schedule. So tonight we're on instead. We'll hope to get back to the Monday night schedule by next week. So we've kind of brought it back a bit every week to get into earlier parts of the week to start things. So there isn't a whole pile to talk about at the moment, of course, because it's that time of year. It's the summertime and we're in the middle of an international break, which has been pesh, absolute tripe to watch, both from a Republic of Ireland perspective and a Scottish perspective. Scotland had a run-of-the-mill 4-0 win against Liechtenstein last night. Ireland beat, they had a draw, I think, recently. I haven't even been following it. I'm that disinterested. So as usual, I welcome my colleagues from Video Celts, Joe McHugh, and the Celtic blog, James Forrest, and myself, of course, Eric Knott from Read Celtic. So we'll dive right in. Obviously, there has been a little bit of action in the transfer market, if you could call it that. We have a new addition signing imminently who is coming from the Fulham youth team by the name of Callum Osmond. Now, I did an article myself on this yesterday evening, and I just said it's a screen project because he's 19 years of age. He never broke into the Fulham first team. He played in Premier League 2, and he played in the EFL Trophy, bagged 10 goals for Fulham, and 17 or 18 odd assists. There's talks of Johnny Kinney going out on loan, and this guy coming in. So for me, it just looks like a replacement for Johnny Kenny. So I'll go to the guys for their opinions on it. It doesn't exactly set the heather alight anyway. It's not overly exciting. What's your opinion on it, Joe?
Underwhelming. There's nothing else to be said for it. You can't describe it. You can't dress it up as anything other than a project, a punt. I suspect the player's agent was in touch with loads of clubs. Celtic bit on it and showed some interest. And clearly, any agent of players in that position know that moving to Scotland is quite an inexpensive option. It's simply down to UEFA formula, any transfer fee. So it'll appeal to all parties. But it's very hard to see where he's going to get his playing time at Celtic. Any young player coming to Celtic is going to struggle, particularly as a striker. Johnny Kenny finally started his match when we were up at Aberdeen towards the end of the season. He's one of a number. If you go back, I mind a Finnish, not an Icelandic guy, Holmberg Finnjonsson or Finnbogason, I think it was. His first name was definitely Holmberg, and I saw him playing a development match at Kilwinning Sports Ground against Kilmarnock on a plastic pitch. He should be used to plastic pitches from Iceland, but the guy made no impact. Similarly, there was Jonathan Afolabi. He was signed in 2019. We did get Jeremy Frimpong at that period, but the other project signings that came in never done anything. Leo Connor. I'm trying to remember the name. There was a guy, Luca, that was signed from Bolton. It was a midfield schemer going to do all sorts of things.
But, Luca Connell.
Luca Connell, yep. Irish under-21 internationalist. He went on to do okay at Barnsley, but we don't have any track record with these type of signings. The only purpose for it that I can see would be if we are going to have a formal link-up with Queen's Park, then it could be sent to Queen's Park on loan, and he'd be getting guaranteed championship football, and we'd find out if he can cut it, if he can come back to Celtic in January or earlier, depending on the terms of these loan deals. That could be an option for him to make an impact and defy the odds, but he's not going to be making a first-team impact. That could be fairly certain. He might get some token minutes in the pre-season games, but we would like to think there's going to be a recognised striker arriving. We already have Adam Ida and have Dyson Maeda. So transfer activity should be geared towards Champions League qualifiers. We've got two of them towards the end of August. Everything should be geared towards that. The boy coming in from Fulham isn't going to be involved in them unless it's a Johnny Kenny Scottish Cup final type emergency. So best of luck to them. It's interesting that Daniel Cummings is going in the opposite direction. Both of them have very similar profiles. Both of them realise that they're not going to make progress at their current clubs for some time. So we'll wait and see on it, but it can barely be described as transfer activity. So with that dose of negativity stroke realism, I'll pass the baton over to James.
Well, first, I don't know who has tried to dress it up as anything other than a project signing, except for maybe the occasional tabloid hack trying to pretend that this is going to be some kind of first-team player. I don't think anybody credible has tried to pretend that this is a first-team signing. I don't only have one issue with it, and it's really a question. Is he better than Johnny Kenny? And if he is better than Johnny Kenny, then I don't really have any complaints. If Johnny Kenny's going to go out on loan somewhere and this guy's going to take his place in the squad, if not being a starter, but at least being in the squad, then I don't have any problem with it, as long as we are improving incrementally. And if this is an incremental improvement, then I'm happy with it. That said, I had no objection, and indeed I have fond memories of the last player in that age bracket that we signed from Fulham's academy. Turned out to be not a bad footballer called Moussa Dembele. So I really don't have any problem with signing 19-year-old kids. As long as they're rated, as long as they've got something. By the same token, Odson Edouard was that age when we signed him for the PSG academy. So I don't really have any problem with it. Nobody's pretending that it's a game-changing piece of business. Nobody at Celtic is pretending that. We'll see what Brendan says when the deal is finally completed. If Brendan talks about him being a first-team player, then I'm going to trust that, and I'm going to see what he can do before I make any judgments about him. But I think we're getting awfully excited about something that really isn't awfully exciting. it's transfer window not stuff. It's always like this every summer. Every single summer, we get a couple of signings that are underwhelming. I mean, there's a story the night that we're trying to sign a young defender from Morton. He is 17. He'll no see first-team football at Celtic for a while either, but he's not being signed as a first-team player. So, you know, I mean, as long as these guys aren't expected to play in the Champions League, I'm not going to worry about it that much. And if he is good enough to come in and play, then it's much ado with none. As people complaining about none. As I say, I'll trust what the manager says. If the manager thinks he's got something, then we'll see what he's got. And we'll see what the manager really thinks he's got when it comes to playing him in games, pre-season games, competitive games. That's where time will tell. But I've got to be honest, I would rather be signing decent prospects in this bracket than flogging £12 million on a guy who has been effectively available for transfer for the last four transfer windows and is still available for transfer right now, and who allegedly we have pulled out of the bidding for today, which pleases me no end, because I think that a guy who hasn't even broken into the Danish national team before now was not a good enough player to pay that kind of money for in the first place. I'm not even convinced that the Chris Garden story has a day truth in it from the start. I think it screams something that was invented by the media and kept going by the media. I have no doubt that he was watched by Celtic for a while, and he may even have been on the Mark Lowell shortlist. And that actually is what I suspect. That he was one of the very, very many players on Mark Lowell's wee list of possible signings. And that may be why Brendan has never been interested in signing him. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'd be inclined to agree with both of your views there on this Callum Osmond. A lot of people are saying, yeah, look, we got a 19-year-old player. What was Moussa Dembele was 20 when he came to Celtic, wasn't he? He wasn't 19. But,
he was 19.
He signed at the age of 19, and I think his birthday's early July, and he was a first-team player at Fulham. He'd played a lot of games for Fulham. Spurs had been interested, and Celtic jumped on the loophole to get a first-team player from Fulham who's about to finish his contract. So Yep, they're the same age. They come from the same club, but very different profiles. The new boy, he's not played any first team football. He's not been out on loan anywhere. Whereas I think Dembele might have about a dozen championship goals on his CV when he arrived at Celtic.
Yeah, Matt O'Reilly was part of the youth setup at Fulham as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, Patrick Roberts.
Yeah, and Patrick Roberts. So look, the caliber of player that has come previously to Celtic from Fulham has been pretty good. So I suppose in that regard, it's there may be some positivity to look at it, you know, to look at from that perspective. Then we can look at the other end of the spectrum today, and obviously we have the official unveiling of Kieran Tierney, which, look, that's been 6 months in the making, but nonetheless, good to see him back at the club today and wearing the Celtic colours again today. So what's your view on that, Joe? You're happy to have Kieran back, yeah, as long as he can stay injury-free?
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how he's just got this horrible reputation, and I think it's probably unfair that he's always injured and he can barely play a couple of games. I don't think he had any injuries last season. He just wasn't getting played. He was injured at the European Championships with Scotland. I think that seemed quite a serious hamstring injury, I think. But I don't recall too many injuries last season. I have got no concerns whatsoever about the injury that ruled him out of Scotland's friendly against Liechtenstein. Nothing to worry on that front. So he should be a very good addition. It's not me, it's disappeared this week, it's James.
James has disappeared today, where has he gone today?
He should be a great player. There's leadership there, there's commitment there, so he's not someone that's just passing through. So you cannot pick fault, even a cynic like myself, you can't pick fault in anything to do with the Tierney deal. There's going to be a difficulty getting a backup for him. It's not going to be very attractive to someone to say, come into Celtic, and if Kieran Tierney's not up to it, if Kieran Tierney's injured, that's when you'll get your playing time. I don't think you're going to get a good quality player there, which might mean that Matthew Anderson or Liam Scales is the plan B. But everything's good about Tierney returning. It's been a problem position. Greg Taylor's been pretty good 80% of the time. But there are certain games, certain fixtures that he's not been suitable for. And I think those should be the fixtures that will be priorities for Kieran Tierney. And I wouldn't have any worries about nippy little right wingers playing against Celtic European ties, because Tierney's as good as we're going to get as a left back. So I'll pass over to James and his Wi-Fi issues.
For a change.
Tonight it's me who's having the problems. I unplugged my microphone, it turned off the speakers as well for some reason, I don't know why. It's good to have Kieran home. It is. I wrote a piece about it earlier today. As most people know, I've been sort of on off about this move. I didn't think that we should sign Kieran. I think these injury issues are still very troubling. But if the manager and the club think that he's put that behind him and they've gave him a 5-year deal, then we're not going to get a better player for that position, full stop. I mean, the travails that we've had at left back in the last few years have been about trying to find a new Kieran Tierney. And the fact that we failed so dramatically and so repeatedly shows you what a good player he is. And so it's good to have him back. We are going to need a backup, though. As I think Oyes had the same thought when we heard they pulled out the Scotland squad. It's, oh my God, hope this isn't bad. And that thought will haunt us every single time he gets a knock or goes down injured in the game or has to come off early in a game. And so we're going to just find someone who's suitable to back him up as soon as we possibly can. There's stories tonight that Greg Taylor's deal might not be done in Greece.
Yeah, but I saw Greg, there was a spanner in the works there, yeah.
Yeah, but obviously Greg does want to go. Greg's obviously looking for a different option and a different challenge at this point in his career, and fair enough to him. So even if that deal collapses, Greg will get a club somewhere else, and we should be looking past that now. It's time to look past that. And I'll tell you what, I hope we're busy in the transfer front. I really do. I hope that we've got a plan B. I hope that we've been scouting left backs for the last 6 months, and that we know broadly who it is we want to bring in. Joe's right about what the challenge is, but you're asking somebody to come in and basically be an understudy. Because as long as Tierney's fit, Tierney plays, that is as simple as that. That's why the boy for Peterborough might be a good signing, because he might be prepared to come in and do that. Who knows? Yeah. But again, he's also an experienced player now. And the challenge has got to be convincing him to come in and sit on the bench. We do play a squad rotation system, and we're not going to play Tierney every week, regardless of how fit he is. So maybe that's the selling point. Maybe we tell somebody, look, come in, you'll play regularly. It's the same selling point as for Lennon Miller. You know, you'll play regular football. If you want to be more than just a rotation player, come in and prove you belong, you belong in the starting 11 every week. And it's the same challenge. Any player who believes in himself, it shouldn't be a problem selling him on that. But football is a funny game. And I just hope we're busy. Because Tierney's injury, pulling out the Scotland squad, gave every single one the same nightmare thought. Oh, my God, here we go again.
It looks like we've got an Ibrox troll called Buffalo Alberts on. He's saying, what about that takeover, guys? You know, so we'll have our touch on that, as we usually do, a bit later on today. And he's obviously saying that Tierney has biscuit hips. So, yeah, maybe Kieran Tierney might surprise him next season. We'll see. I'm sure he will. But, it's been, you know, probably hearing about that injury yesterday and pulling out of the Scotland squad is a bit concerning. And that's the biggest fear we're going to have with Tierney. There's no two ways about that. And the worry you'd have is that, you know, the level of hammer throwers we have up in the Scottish game, that somebody will do a serious damage to him in a game at some point and knock him out for a prolonged length of time. So it's, you know, like you said about this kid from Peterborough, it's probably no harm to have that backup player in there. And with Greg Taylor most likely going to poke, you know, in Greece, he'll definitely get game time regardless if that guy comes in. So that's pretty much, I suppose, covering everything that's happening on the transfer front so far, which isn't a whole pile. And the Matthias Kvistgaarden rumor. Would that one ever just die and go to bed, like, because we're all sick to death of it. Four transfer windows now, as we said, that's been dragging on. So I think, look, if it's dead and buried now, I'll leave it dead and buried and let's not talk about it anymore. So moving on, I saw an article in the Record today. Obviously, you're kind of trying to find things to talk about and things to be interested in at this time of the season, or in between the seasons. And there was an article out today which I thought was ridiculous, that the longer that Brendan Rodgers goes on saying that he's not, you know, he's not committing, or, you know, it's going to create speculation. And that's exactly all it does, is create speculation. But to get an interview with Ramon Vega, and for Ramon Vega to sort of, you know, sing the praises of Ange Postecoglou and what Ange Postecoglou can do for the future and all that kind of thing, and then the suggestion that Ange Postecoglou might have a 12-month sabbatical and wait around for the Celtic job. And it's like, all that's going through my mind is like, what is it about this rinse and repeat thing with Celtic? And I mean, I know the media have latched onto it as well, but I mean, what are we going to do? Bring in Ange Postecoglou after Brendan Rodgers finishes out his contract. Ange Postecoglou does 3 years, and then we bring back Brendan Rodgers again. I mean, it's stale thinking. It's just, we've got to get out of this whole rinse and repeat mode that we have of bringing play. I know, look, like you said, you didn't want Kieran Tierney back in the first place. I'm glad to have Kieran Tierney back. I'm glad to have Jota back. They're good quality players. But, I mean, Neil Lennon was here twice. Brendan Rodgers has been here twice. The talk of Ange Postecoglou being at Celtic twice. It's getting a bit ridiculous now at this stage, and it shows that there doesn't seem to be any fresh forward thinking in the boardroom at all, if these are the kind of things that we're having discussed in the press. Now, that's the impression we give the press, clearly, and it gives them a story to run with. But, I mean, what's your view on it, Joe? It's a kind of a ridiculous story to put out there, because I don't expect Ange Postecoglou back at Celtic at all.
I wouldn't rule it out, but in terms of the news, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, there was virtually no football in the newspapers at this time of year. You would get the cup final, you'd get the Scotland-England game, and then be shut down. It'd barely be a story. You could go a week or two without Celtic being on the back pages or any story in between. But now they've got to just continue their coverage. They've got to come up with 4 or 5 stories a day on Celtic. There'll be a transfer roundup. Stop short of a live blog, but genuinely, there is no content out there. You can phone up old former players and get their views, and there's a vague connection there that Ramon Vega came to Celtic from Spurs. He's a big Spurs fan, Ange Postecoglou. It's easy peasy. You can give him a 15-minute phone call and you can knock out a story and make a splash on it, and et cetera, et cetera. But there's nothing there. There's no content there. I certainly wouldn't rule it out. I don't know about taking a year's sabbatical. Ange and his agent will be well connected. His availability, his terms will be known to various clubs, and there'll be more adventures for Ange. I don't know if Australia, the World Cup, possibly might appeal to him. He won't be short of options, and our first option should be getting Brendan Rodgers on a new deal. And the way to do that is bring in a couple of players. It's going to make Celtic better for the Champions League qualifier playoff towards the end of August. There's every reason to fear there's going to be a standoff. We all know the way Celtic have operated over recent years. There's no time that they've been proactive. There's no time they've been ahead of the curve where they've been getting players in advance. January was a warning to us what to expect when Kyogo was sold without a replacement. So brace yourself for more stories like Ramon Vega's take on Ange Postecoglou and anything else. Celtic won't. There's another 3 weeks before Celtic are back pre-season training. We'll get some pictures. There might be a media conference or two, but they've got to fill their spaces. They've got to fill up. Got to attract their internet interest, reaction, and Google Analytics, Google Analysis, even Analytics. I'll get it right third time. So just let it go over your head. Don't get too worried or upset or read too much into it. Reporters are struggling to justify themselves. There's virtually nothing about, so it's scraping the barrel. So from me scraping the barrel and being unable to pronounce Analytics, I'll pass over to James.
Yeah, before you do, Ryan McDonald was the guy who wrote the story today, and he's a football trends specialist. That's his position at the Daily Record. So that to me is a guy who understands the machinations of the internet and how to find everything, how to find a story on gambling websites and all the rest of it. So yeah, James, your opinion on that?
This is actually the second story in that vein this week. Was it Jackson who wrote the first one? It may have been Jackson who wrote the first one. This suggestion that if we don't get our act together, we're going to miss out on Ange next season, or you know, Brendan will give us the runaround. The first article actually suggested that Ange will be hovering over Celtic like some kind of ghost for the next 12 months, right? Ange will have a job long before Rodgers has to make a decision about his future. You know, if Rodgers is going to sign a deal imminently, then the whole season is going to be about that. I mean, we know the whole season is going to be about that. That's why it's got to get decided quick, right? But I think before Rodgers inks his deal or tells us that he's not going to ink another deal, Ange will have a job. So the whole thing is moot anyway. There's no way that that guy as good as him is going to sit around and wait on a phone call from Celtic Park that might never come. It's ridiculous. And at the end, what are we going to do anyway? Are we going to do the same thing again? Because we've hired Lennon twice. We've hired Rodgers twice. So now we're going to hire Ange twice as well. If we did something like that, I would seriously question the sanity, not just the competence, but the sanity of the people in our boardroom. I mean, I'm already freaked out by the idea that we've re-signed Jota, that we've re-signed Tierney, and there was talk that we attempted to re-sign Chris Iyer. I don't know if it's true. I hope it isn't true. because that suggests that our scouting department is doing fuck all, or that our manager thinks the scouting department is doing fuck all. The idea of signing, re-signing Kyogo is getting floated. I mean, come on, seriously. Seriously. And the number of Celtic sites that are running this stuff like it's a good idea. Where is their imagination?
Yeah.
There are 10,000 players out there. We're only looking for 4 or 5 of them who are good enough to enhance this squad. And the best that most of these people can do is let's re-sign a player that we sold 4 years ago. Let's re-sign a player that we sold in January. Come on, guys. Honestly. I know the summer's going to be long, but you don't have to make it longer because that just makes it longer. Just makes it feel longer for all of us. Have to sift through this stuff every single day. And you know what? I don't want to get on anybody's case, right? But if a mainstream journalist cannot think of something to write about on a given day, you're in the wrong fucking job, mate. You're in the wrong job. To give you an example, right? And that will sound like a stupid example, right? In the last month or so, right? Even during the season, I wrote a story comparing the Ibrox operation to the 4 Chaos Gods from fucking Warhammer. The other day I did another bizarre one where I talked about Steve Clark and atrocious torture instruments. Come on, use your imagination. There are stories to write. Be daring, be bold. Steady regurgitating the same shit over and over again. Honestly. Oh, my God.
Well, funnily enough, last night, the whole Callum Osman story was released. The story was released in The Record using a Celtic website as a source, which means they're really scraping the bottom of the barrel if they're... Well, look, we know our websites can write some good stuff, so clearly they're now desperate for stories, so they're actually coming to the Celtic bloggers to get a story,
No, they're not coming to the Celtic bloggers. Mark Hendry has been doing the rounds. Mark Hendry was at NewsQuest, I think, mainly the Evening Times. I first noted him when he came up with the Alexandro Bernabei story. So he must have got that from a pretty decent source. You don't just casually come across a story like that. Since then, he left the Herald for Football Scotland. He's then surfaced, I think it's GRV Media, which covers Hail Hail 67. In the last week, I've seen his byline in the Herald and also the Daily Record. And he now seems to have a deal as well with Seltzer here. So it's not particularly a Celtic blogger. It's Mark Hendry, who's as proper a football journalist as you get in Scotland. He's been at a few places in the last couple of, not in the last 2 years. As I say, NewsQuest, Football Insider, definitely not Football Insider. Sorry, Mark. Definitely not Football Insider. It was Football Scotland. I think he was at Football Scotland, and then he was at Hail Hail 67. He seems to have finished up with them. And as I said, the Herald, Record and Seltzer here have had the stories this week. So they believe in him. And just the tone of that article that the guy from Fulham, that sounds kosher. That's not just a flyer. There's enough detail in there. And as I said, the fact that he stood out to me the minute he got the Bernabei story, that's somebody that's got some connections. So... It's not a Celtic blogger. It appeared in a Celtic blog, but just correcting that small point. And to repeat, in case his lawyers are looking in, Mark Hendry has never, ever, ever, ever worked for Football Insider. they prefer guys like Fraser Fletcher. Fraser Fletcher's a good Scottish correspondent. He comes up with nonsense like Scott Wright is going to the Saudi Pro League because somebody did it as a wind-up. So keep up the good work, Fraser. He started off at BBC Scotland working alongside giants like Kenny McIntyre, Alistair Lamont and Tom English. So he's now found his spiritual home at Team Talk. I think he had the £30 million bid coming in for Raskin, with Aston Villa joining Leeds in the battle for the brilliant Belgian. So It's worth spending a little time to look at the names that are coming up with these stories, find out their background, and you can find out if there's any credibility whatsoever, or whether it's just another kite flying exercise.
Yeah.
Amen.
It is, I suppose, it's good to have that kind of connection if you want to get a story. If the Daily Record wants to get a story, at least they know they're probably getting something fairly accurate in that regard. So when he said in that story that Brendan Rodgers rates Callum Osmond, maybe there's an element of truth to that. So look, we wait and see what happens with that whole Osmond story and see what pans out. So we move on to the next story, and I suppose, James, I'll touch on this because of the article that you did last night about the interview with David Lowe on the Celtic Way. And David Lowe explained pretty clearly that the seeds, I suppose, of austerity are being planted at Ibrox in terms of, you know, that £250,000 that is being saved on academy players' meals, the culling of 13 of the academy players at Ibrox, and obviously the cost saving that's involved in that. So obviously I read that story with interest, and I did a story myself last night and said that there was the perfect storm was brewing at Ibrox, you know, all the things that were kind of in the melting pot that would come together over a period of time once the season kicks off, starting with when we go to Ibrox. And if we win at Ibrox, and depending on whether the Onion Bears are allowed to display one of their, you know, let's kill Celtic supporters, TIFOs, and whether the Americans put a stop to that kind of thing. So there's a lot of interesting things in the melting pot that could happen in the coming months at Ibrox. But if austerity is one of those things, that could be a concern to us, because the worry you'd have then is if austerity is implemented at Ibrox, are our board going to become complacent and follow a similar vein? You know, if they're thinking that things are going to get quiet at Ibrox, they're not going to spend a fortune, it's going to be cost-cutting, you know, captain disappointed is going to be the captain going forward, so that straight away is a signal of what's going to happen with the playing squad. Is austerity over there a good thing or a bad thing for us, James, do you think?
You know what? I am ever amazed at how much of my inbox is filled with these cretins these days. Hammering away at us for caring about Scottish football and for caring about the environment in which we operate. As I've said in a couple of pieces recently, my interest in the shit show across the city is twofold. First, I have the natural human interest in the freak show. Human beings have always enjoyed the freak show. It always draws a crowd. It is so much more interesting than a stable, well-run football club is. I think every football supporter should have a rival like ours that forever trips over its own feet. It can't organise its shit into the plan. It makes life so much better and so much more amusing and entertaining. And they flatter themselves by using words like obsessed. We just enjoy the freak show. And the second thing that interests me is the last time their club got itself into trouble, it almost crashed the whole of the Scottish game. I almost crashed all of Scottish football. And we now know that there was all sorts of cheating and malfeasance going on over there. And if we're not keeping an eye on that club, a very close eye, then we are basically doing a great disservice to Celtic. So I just wanted to say that and put that out there. I also want to say this. The media was never going to do due diligence on their behalf. The SFA was never going to protect them or the greater game, because it never has. And it doesn't really have any interest in it. I said this before and I'll say it again, just in case they're still not getting it. We're the best friends you guys have ever had. You don't even know it. You can't grasp it. But had you listened to us on white, you might have stopped it before it happened. Had you listened to us on green, he would never have signed all those onerous contracts. Had you listened to us on Ashley, when he got quite so excited, talking about how you were going to get a Champions League standard team and he was going to fund it when he hadn't done that at the club he was at. You didn't listen to us on King, and he's left you in the absolute shit state that you were in when the Americans came along, and you're not going to listen to us on the Americans. Of course you're not. Because whether they're benevolent owners or whether they're malignant owners, your club is not going to be markedly different than it is right now, except that it no longer has the Rio Rangers men willing to pay the bills. Austerity has been inevitable at Ibrox for the last 10 years. Inevitable. It's the inevitable consequence of a club that cannot stop spending money other than it brings in. The directors were never going to pay the bills indefinitely. And the Americans certainly aren't going to just write check after check after check. Austerity is long overdue. And what I've never been able to grasp about this whole takeover thing is how anybody of an Ibrox persuasion actually believes that these guys, these so-called hard-nosed, world-class businessmen, are going to go in there and spend more money on a loss-making business, on a business that's already losing tens of millions every year. These guys were going to go in and spend more and make more losses. Well, if they're hard-nosed businessmen, why would they ever do that? Why would they ever do that? If these are ego-driven people who just want the thrill of owning a football club, they would never have built fortunes in the first place. Andrew Kavanagh's a health insurance guy. They're hardly the most exciting people on the planet. These aren't speculators or guys like the guys at Leeds, the guys at Brentford and Brighton. These are guys who built their money on gambling empires, right? And being number crunchers and taking risks. Like, Andrew Kavanagh is nothing like that. He's not one of those guys. So I've never understood why they believe that this is going to be another era of big spending. It was never going to be that. It was always going to be an era of cost cutting. And we've tried to tell them this at every stage in this takeover. Don't get overexcited. Don't start expecting 8.6 billion of 49er alleged wealth to be lavished on your club. That's not your money. That's not yours. That's not available for your manager to spend in the transfer market. Even if the inclination was there to do it, UEFA won't let you do it. It's like talking to a fucking wall, trying to convince these people of sensible, easy to work out stuff. Really is. It's frustrating at times. They just don't want to understand it.
Yeah, but the question I asked you is, do you think it's going to be good or bad for us if that's what comes?
For us, it can't be anything but good for us. I have wondered for the last 10 years what an Ibrox club which had to live within its means was going to look like. And we're going to find it. It's no coincidence, right, that the press today is talking about how the Croatian striker might be out of their price range. Yeah, absolutely. How the Israeli striker is now out of their price range. Absolutely. Like the idea they're going to spend £6-8 million on a player, nonsensical. They're looking at free transfers. That's what they're looking at. They're looking at guys they can get really, really cheap or guys they can get for free. And they haven't listened to what the guys who've taken over the club are saying. We're not going to do that anymore. We're going to run this sustainably. And that's only going to be, of course, that's only going to be good for us. Because I don't think their future is getting stronger anytime soon. The guys who are running it right now, their first priority is going to be turn the taps off and stop flooding the place out. So once they've stabilised the club, they can then start taking it forward and putting building blocks in place to make it better. But that's years away. And the one thing that we know is they're not going to get years. The Ibrox fans won't have the patience for a 5-year, 10-year project, especially if we're winning leagues and leagues and leagues in the meantime. So it does not have a happy ending, guys. For them, it does not have a happy ending. Your question is in two parts, though. Is austerity going? Is their austerity going to be good for us? Yes, absolutely it is. Because I think they'll go backwards before they go forwards, and that's a disaster for them considering where they are now. But the second part of that is, what do we do and how do we react? Well, I don't think that we do react. I think that we just keep on doing what we're doing, reaching for the next rung on the European ladder. Because if we do that, everything else takes care of itself. And it doesn't matter if they pull another £20 million and another £20 million on top of that. David Lowe thinks it will take £80 million just to stabilise them and get them to a level where we're at right now. But our aim should be that by the time they get to where we are right now, we're already another two steps ahead. And yeah, as long as we keep reaching for that rung on the European ladder, we will be two steps ahead.
Yeah, okay. Well, I want to get Joe's view on it as well.
That's the question. Joe's right, of course. The best thing that we can do right now is get Brendan's future sorted for the next 3 or 4 years. And the best way to do that is to go out and sign that man some top players and give him a reason to stick around. If he sticks around and we show the right level of ambition, we take that next step in Europe. Just catch us if you can, and they won't.
Yeah. Joe, what's your view? I mean, what do you think if, and it looks likely that austerity is going to hit over there, what do you think? Is that a good thing or a bad thing for us? Is it going to make our board stand still, or are our board just going to plough on regardless and get us set up well for Europe and get us insulated against when they do actually get their shit together?
No. The only aim, the only interest of the Celtic board is to stay a few points ahead of their friends from Ibrox. If they're backtracking, Celtic will be backtracking. It's tragic, but it's true. It's what the club has done since 2012. They've been desperate to get their friends from Ibrox back in. They've been desperate to give them 2,500 tickets for Celtic Park. Been desperate to revive their favourite term, a term that they've got copyright on. So, and unfortunately, it's good enough for, I'd say, 80% or more Celtic supporters, finishing above them, a couple of points ahead, sending some text messages and WhatsApp to their pals, slagging them off, look at us. Whereas a properly run Celtic, it'd be like Man United comparing themselves with Bolton Wanderers. Man United are in a bit of a state just now, but they don't bother too much about what Bolton are doing. Celtic should not be benchmarked himself against what's going on at Ibrox. There's a very, very nice European alternative. It gave us 10 games and the season just finished. There's 5 great matches at Celtic Park. Previously, we'd made a right mess of it. There's been some horrific Champions League nights at Celtic Park, but the new setup is tailored for us. If Celtic were remotely progressive and forward-thinking, then they could make some real strides in that, and we could match Bruges. That would be fantastic. Bruges might have some good seasons and bad seasons, but over a 5-year spell or a 10-year spell, Bruges do pretty well in Europe. They've got young players that they sell on, and they know what they're doing with the money. They don't just let the money gather up in their bank account and pay corporation tax to the Belgian equivalent of HMRC. So there's plenty of options for Celtic out there. They should always be looking towards Europe. If Celtic are doing reasonable in Europe, then it takes care of everything in Scotland. It's not a case of one or the other. It's not a case of we can't take our eye off things domestically. If Celtic are aiming to do well in Europe, success will follow in Scotland. And surely, at some point in the next 5 years, a well-run Celtic can reach the last 16 of the Champions League. Not just the playoff for the last 16. Surely we can reach the last 16, and you never know if there's a few little... If a couple of players catch fire, if you get a bit of luck in the draw, you might make the last 8 or even the last 4. But that aiming for that, punching in that direction is very possible. But unfortunately, whatever's going on at Ibrox, the Celtic board will be keeping their eye on that and spending, investing as little as possible to stay ahead of them. And in terms of what's going on over there, I have no wish to give them any warnings whatsoever. Fire away, lads, get on with it. You provide us with great hilarity. It's a never-ending source of humour. The madness that goes on there, and that comes from the club itself. It comes from their supporters. It comes from legacy media. and fantastically it comes from fan media. Fan media is absolutely on board with all things to do with the LA 49ers. There is nothing to do with the LA 49ers. There's a vague connection to 49ers Enterprises, but the man leading the show is Andrew Kavanagh. And Andrew Kavanagh was discovered by Paul Murray. Now, there's your definition of a blazer chaser. And he turned out to be Cilla Black. He was the matchmaker. Paul Murray put Andrew Kavanagh in touch with a nice guy in South Africa called Dave King, who only has the club's interests at heart. It's nothing to do with a 5-year search to sell his shares. All he wants to do is create a legacy so that young Bears in future can point to pictures of Dave King and say, "Mr. King saved us. What a great man Mr. King is." That's his legacy. And the Record, The Sun, and Herald News Quest Rangers Review, they all get their updates at the same time from Dave King. They get an email sent over and they all reprint it religiously. So it's hilarious. There's so much nonsense out there. And just ignore us. We are obsessed nutcases. We're not having any enjoyment out of Celtic being the most successful team in Scotland. 21 of the last 27 trophies have been at Celtic, but we have no real interest in that. We want to point you in the right direction. Just fire ahead, lads. Keep on going. Keep on doing as you're doing. Craig White was introduced in November 2010. In May 2011, he was cheered down Edmondson Drive. There was almost garlands of flowers thrown at his feet by the adoring hordes. What a reception he got. For 6 months, within 24 hours, Celtic supporters had said, "By the way, this guy isn't a billionaire. He's got a mortgage in a castle in Aberdeen or somewhere up in the Highlands." But they don't want to hear reality, so just let them go on with it. The 49ers are going to pour millions and millions into the club, and tomorrow's going to be fantastic. But there's a piece in the Record today, and Scott McDermott went through the entire squad, and I think there's only 4 players in that squad he wants to start. Yeah. And 2 of them were Jack Butland and James Tavernier. So if that's 2 of your 4 starters, he's written off 23. The other 25 is inferior to Butland and Tav. So that was good hilarity. And that was the sort of thing that you could get on a message board or one of their fan media sites. So keep it going, lads. We're loving every minute of it. And Andrew Kavanagh, he might not be the guy that you all expect him to be, but dream on. And by the way, there's no Santa Claus and there's no Tooth Fairy either. Sorry.
Yeah, look, to be fair, I suppose we're all guilty of being, as they say over in America, rubber knickers and, you know, turning to look at the car crash all the time. We can't keep our eyes off the car crash over there, you know. And I mean, it's great entertainment. There's no two ways about it. But I don't know. I mean, that's my worry, is that if austerity does come there, that the board will just follow suit. They'll just, you know, like they always do, they just keep them at arm's length. And they won't spend an absolute fortune. And you're dead right, Joe. We need to just forget about them and focus on Europe, focus on what we can do in Europe. And surely last season's run in Europe, the finance that we made out of that run, the money we banked, the attendances we had at Celtic Park, surely all of that has to factor into their thinking. And they have to think to themselves, yeah, look, we need to focus on this. We need to get the club into the Champions League and basically go as far as we can possibly go and make a similar fortune like we did last season, you know, because we did very well. We did much better than expected there last season, you know, and it's definitely, like you said, it's well suited to us now. But at the other end of the spectrum is, like, people have always said that if we were going to win a European trophy, the chance that we'd have of winning a European trophy would be either Europa League or Conference League, you know, because they're the kind of competitions that we could make serious inroads into if we had, you know, if we had a good run. And it's catch 22. We're never going to be participating in those competitions as long as we're aiming for the Champions League, but we're never going to win the Champions League either. We have to be realistic about that too. But then again, at the same time, we need to focus on getting as far as we can. And who knows, someday we might hit a quarterfinal. Someday miraculously we might hit the semi-final. You know, you can dream. But just, I suppose, the next point we'll finish up with that one, but the next point to move on to is, look, when it comes to summertime, we always expect that there's going to be a big money transfer out to finance the big money transfers that are going to be coming in. And there's a few rumors floating around the place at the moment. But the biggest one that seems to be kind of circulating is Nicholas Kuhn. And the rumors, Brentford are interested. Do either of you guys, and I'll start with you, Joe, do either of you guys think we're going to have a big sale this summer? And if we do, who do you think it's going to be?
Yes, there will be a big sale this summer. And the Nicholas Kuhn to Brentford story was created by Fraser Fletcher during the week. So all he's doing is reheating an old story. Every team in England will have watched Celtic in the Champions League. That's a closer relation. Oops, there goes an earpiece. That's closer comparison for them to the value and usefulness of players than playing in the SPFL. So Nicholas Kuhn had a very, very good Champions League. He looked very good. He scored against Bayern Munich. He scored against RB Leipzig. He was outstanding against RB Leipzig. So these clubs, they're not doing their job if they've not been watching Nicholas Kuhn, if they've not been watching Dyson Maeda. So it's what football clubs do. They've watched every team in the Champions League, and someone up the road at Celtic that's doing well in the Champions League is always going to be of interest to English clubs. In terms of who Celtic will sell, absolutely anyone at all. Doesn't matter who it is. If there's an offer of 20 million coming in, Celtic will jump at it and they'll repackage it and tell you that this guy really wanted to leave and this, that, the next thing. But it's no one in particular. It could be Hatate, it could be Maeda, it could be Carter Vickers. I'm surprised that there's not much mention of Alistair Johnson. A bit up and down last season, but Celtic's a club switched down to third gear after the Bayern Munich game, or before the Bayern Munich game when they sold Kyogo. But I would think Alistair Johnson's got everything that would appeal to middle of the road English Premier League side. So it could be almost anyone. But I think when a £20 million bid is put in front of the Celtic board, then they'll jump at that. And as I said, they'll tell you that it was a greedy player and they wanted to leave and this, that and the next thing. But there'll definitely be someone sold. And I would suspect that there'll be a big sale before there's any worthwhile incoming business. That's just repeating what's happened in previous seasons. 2 years ago, it was Jota and then Starfelt. And then during the course of last season, they waited until Matt O'Reilly had gone before they brought in Engels, Trusty and McCowan. And then Kyogo was sold in January. So it's a priority for Celtic to sell players and then pat themselves in the back by buying other players, winning the league, finishing above their pals at Ibrox and telling them they get a player trading model, when the reality is the summer of 2023 confirmed we have absolutely no player trading model. That was the worst job lot of players ever presented to a Celtic manager. Over to you, James.
Well, we sent a dreadful message to our own manager, to the squad, to European football, to anybody who was looking at Celtic as a progressive, forward-thinking club. A dreadful message we sent in January when we sold Kyogo shortly after the Young Boys game. We did not take the final game seriously at all, even though that game determined where we would finish in the group. We virtually wrote off the knockout tie. We advertised to the whole world that just getting to the knockout stage was mission accomplished, and we didn't care if we sneaked in there by a point or a goal or whatever it was. And as for the game itself, we were happy just to be on that stage. And that was a message we sent, and it could not have been sent clearer if we tried. And I know a lot of people didn't accept that at the time. And a lot of them still don't accept it, even though the window shut with it is replacing Kyogo. But it's a fact nonetheless, and we sent that message and it was loud and clear. And European football got it, even if a lot of our own fans steadfastly refused to see it. We can send another clear-cut message this summer. If we don't emerge from the summer stronger than we go into it. Now, the difficulty here is that I expect a major sale because Rodgers has telegraphed it in no uncertain terms. Rodgers knows which members of the team aren't happy and are looking for a move. And he is teeing us up for at least one of them going. And I don't have any problem with that at all. There really isn't. Maeda, I would hate to see leave. I think that he's as close to being the perfect player as we've had since Larson. And I'll be loath to see it happen if it does happen. But it won't be an epochal end-of-the-world disaster, provided we go and replace a guy. And I will feel the same way no matter who it is who gets sold. As long as we make an honest effort and replace the guy, and the manager gets the money to spend, and he gets to spend it where he wants on who he wants, I'll be broadly fine with whatever happens in the summer. As long as we emerge from it with a stronger squad, not stronger starting 11, but a stronger squad overall than we went in here. And that should be the objective. Anything less than that, and Rodgers is gone, right? And we've already telegraphed to every single available manager out there that we are ourselves an austerity club, and that is how we will be run. And it will not matter if we're making profits. We won't reinvest the profits. We would rather pay HMRC its cut every single year than properly equip the team. And that message will be received loud and clear by any progressive manager that we approach who will tell us where to go. So, for once, this board needs to start thinking about what the future is going to look like. If Rodgers stays, then we're going to need to make Rodgers the kind of offer and the kind of commitment and the kind of guarantees that will keep him here. If he goes, we're looking at a full-scale rebuild again next season to no one's benefit. And we'll be doing it with a hand tied behind our back because we'll have made it clear to any incoming manager that there are strict conditions he has to work under, and no up-and-coming manager will work under those conditions. We'll end up with our own version of Russell Martin. And it's just, that will just be a disaster. It will be a disaster.
So I think if we're hitting the nail on the head here, really, the basic situation is that if we don't back Brendan Rodgers in the transfer window, we can kiss him goodbye. And that's the reality.
We need to be thinking beyond this season anyway. If we don't back Rodgers in the window and Rodgers goes, then the message is clear and everyone will understand that Rodgers has left because he doesn't feel like Celtic are sufficiently motivated to move forward, right? If Rodgers signs a new contract and then we don't back him, we're sending a message to Rodgers that he's just wasting his time here. And we're creating a whole new fucking crisis of uncertainty at the club. I mean, there comes a time when we just have to... There comes a time when we have to understand that we're not the only people watching. We're not the only people looking at Celtic and coming to these conclusions. Everybody could see that we gave up on the last group stage game when we sold Kyogo. Everybody could see that. All we had to do was keep the guy a week longer. That was it. But as soon as the Young Boys game was out of the way, and as soon as qualification was guaranteed, that deal was done. It was like, the next game, who cares about the next game? We're through, that's it. Job done. And everybody in Europe understood that. Everybody in Europe understood what the message was. And we went into the Bayern Munich game without having signed a striker. Everybody in Europe understood what the message was there. This game is not a priority for this club. The players will take it seriously. The manager will take it seriously. But the people running the club don't take it seriously. And if we project that same attitude again this summer, no one will take us seriously. And they'll be right not to.
Yeah, it's fair comment, James. It's fair comment. So look, that's pretty much covered all of our agenda for this week. Joe, you don't have anything further to add in regards to that. I think James pretty much sums it up there, that if we don't show ambition in this transfer window, that we're going to have a situation where things could go wrong, putting it mildly.
The only thing to add is please subscribe. Please give us a thumbs up. When you subscribe, click on the bell for nominations. Notifications. I'm having a great night tonight. Click on the bell for notifications and pass comments. It's a live show. We've had lots of comments during the course of the show. But if you can return to YouTube and put on comments on there, all these things get noted by YouTube. It pushes you up the tree. We're at the very bottom of the tree after just starting 6 months ago. So please do all your YouTube things, and that will help us out greatly. But nothing really changes at Celtic. When they come up with all these great signings and retain their players, we'll be happy to eat humble pie, but I suspect it'll be a while yet.
Yeah, I think it'll be a while before we eat humble pie when it comes to our opinions on the board anyway. Look, everything Joe said. Keep following us, guys. Like, subscribe, and hit the bell. And we'll keep giving you content every week across this boring, boring summer. Look, we managed to pull an hour out tonight, and we got plenty to talk about. And we had a few Ibrox trolls on there who we had to kick off. So clearly they're coming over to us for the real news, to get the real story of what's going on at Ibrox, because they can't get the real story from their own fan media, you know, so they have to come here. So look, we'll call it for tonight, guys. And
quick question.
Yeah, go on.
Am I crazy, or does the transfer window proper open in a week?
No. You can sign players anytime you like. We don't play a competitive match to the beginning of August. You can sign players yesterday, you can sign players today, you can sign them next week. It's the 16th of June, you can start registering with the SFA. So there is no excuse not to sign a player tomorrow, none at all.
No, I just want to know why we didn't sign a player yesterday then.
And on that note, we call it for this week, and we'll probably be on track for next week back on Monday. So, and Joe will be hosting for next Monday's show, so we look forward to that one, and see you all then, guys. Have a good one.
Cheers,
guys.